great workshop tonight, so Morali, Shams, and Atun, it was great, really, really fantastic work, so that was good. I just don't usually read from this book. It's an old book. It came out in about 2000. So I say this to you because this is a poem for the young men here, really, and the young women, if they're listening. I wouldn't like you to think that this is me now. This is about 12 years ago. But I like this poem, and I think young men like it, so I read it anyway. It's a bit naughty. Young men. The bodies of young men are firm and brown all over. Silky skin, they smooth move like dolphins rolling fluidic in the fluttering drip of sheep. The eyes of young men are brown, flecked hazel, when shirts the colour of new shoots in the apple tree, or the very green of apples themselves flows languid across their cheeks. The hearts of young men are patient and calm, not virgin or selfish, as the middle-aged tell us. They share, they say, wait for me to help. I'm here and not hurrying away. With me, the job takes half the time and is half as heavy. The hands of young men are slow and loving. They have no sense of time hurrying us on. They do not hear the creeping tread of hours along the hallway. Their bodies have no need to rush, reveling in the flesh of women, wave on wave on wave, winding, twining their loving selves, long into night, into day. The hearts of young men have been hurt. They are not saved from pain by being young, but have learned already loss and grief. They too fear its sting, its long grave, deep spike, leaving a dull ache long after the wound has healed. The lives of young men have been touched by death. They know the souls of those drowned in cars in the Brisbane River, of those with broken necks when the stakes of judgment threw the bike too high, too wide, too skewed, it flew straight into the wind claws of death. The farewell of young men is sweet with kindness, tender in parting. They look for friendship after the body has cooled, and what remains is memory, the journey shared, that wanders back past the years to the wildness inside. The girl, momentarily forgotten in the weary tug and push of midlife routine. Young men are not yet touched by age. That's all. Thank you. And another poem that actually I don't read very often either. I thought I might today. I'm going to read Venice later for Seamus. But this is another Italian poem, and it's about young men, and it's about our sons really. My son's in 2004 in Florence, so they would have been about 14 and 10. And some of those times where the mother is so irritated to begin with, and then life brings its message. So those of you that have seen Michelangelo's David, or seen the photograph of his fabulous, have you seen? It's so beautiful. If you haven't, look it up on the web. It's beautiful. Beautiful statue of the naked young David before he has the sling with the stone before he kills Goliath. David in stone. Stumbling through streets narrow and waist-pinched in a city of bridges, dragging two young sons, I am snappy, irritated by searching. Suddenly, fumbling with space under this high dome, I am stilled by a smooth perfection in you, towering unclothed above, your gaze turned from me. There is no breath, no heart striking time. Yet sensuality runs tributaries in your veins, seethed away into stone, thrilling through the skin of marble. An eager mouse could trace through topography, rising the length of firm calf, scrotum seized thigh, belly curved to receive a cheek, ribs taut with the lungs cage. In your groin, the crevice of desire yet to bloom. In your hand, the sinuous veins of fresh life caught waiting. If ever chiseled flesh invites tongue, if ever youth's flush invites the kiss, you stand ready. Yet this is not a day for thoughts of lovers, boys nagging at my side. We walk around you, calm acceptance in your profile, fleeting, absent from your direct gaze. There, full lips slightly open, begin their understanding of what is being asked, of what being anointed now means. No small matter it is by God. Foolish you must have seemed, facing Goliath shimmering in bronze mail. Foolish to stand naked without shame, only a shepherd's leather sling swinging loosely from your shoulder and five round stones. Certainty in God is your sheen and girdle, invisible armour, the skin of faith, sleek as an eel. Your hand curls around the cool, blunt stone of death. The moment moves in, as it might to all young men, balancing on the ledge of change, life unravelling. Your frown quivers a furrow of regret for what is about to come. Death, the scissor sword, and heavy hand. Sudden burden of your fame, a kingdom, wars, the wives, the heads, the children, but Jonathan. And I who have sons pull them close suddenly and shiver, for what made you a man? Neither spear, nor javelin, nor sword, I hope. Not all that killing. This instant, perhaps, this reflection, this hesitation of inhaled breath, this concern before the measured act, never the act itself. Unblemished, here is the last moment of innocence, catches in cold rock. Thank you. And now Venice. Venice is the poem that a lot of people like this poem. I think they must have the same experience. You know, I always had this image that I would go to Venice in a state of romance. The lover. The gondola. The singing gondolier. Rather a glass or too much of wine. And under the bridge. It would all be really wonderful. So I ended up in Venice with my two sons.
They're all back there.
And one of them, as he got into the gondola said, waiting and waiting, I said, what are you waiting for? He said, the man. I said, there is no man. And he said, ah, no man. He said, I was singing to you anyway. I said, please do not sing to me. It's the middle of the day. And the bridges were too low because we went at the cheap time, which was high tide. So we all had to roll over to get under the bridges. So this is Venice, and it was written for Hugh, who was a dreadful Irishman, of course. The story is obvious when you get to it. And it was the flood warning night. And could everybody turn their phones off? Well done, Louis. Hello? Okay. Venice, you. Sirens thrill along mute canals near midnight. I count the required 16 for flood warning. Water laps intimate under the window at Hotel Treyarchy, swelling across cobbled fondamenta beneath. I watch from the second floor, knowing others hoist quickly their chairs to the ceiling elsewhere in ground floor rooms. The sea is making inroads across islands of disbelief. Lovers drink from each other's lips between star street lamps, feet soaked in salt. Here I am only lost walking, never on the water. Hail came suddenly in the afternoon, lightning jolting the boat from Murano, shattering talk and the bare uplifted faces. I remember your eyes. I drink wine from a jug, ruby red, fat and round the taste. Your kisses still stroll across my tongue with it, though you are oceans away. Every filigree of connection the body makes from lips, around a breast, along a thigh, shiver down deep inside deep, deep memory. Masks are hanging from the walls, crowding windows of small shops in the market of Canal de Canareggio. Silver and peacock blue, raven black and scarlet, their shape-shifting visages await the gifted sight we alone can position there. Here is the place to lose myself. One step inside this space of gold, all children left behind, all worries, and the dent of daily life in the goblet of fancy evades recognition along with the name, the obligation of returning. Sheathed with disguise, it is free. I could do anything here. Venice is an old lover still wet with longing, her body unashamed. Everywhere bridges over a maze of aqueous veins, the map of love's capillaries, with some dead ends, some narrow ways. Some bridges a gondola can only pass under if I lean heavily to one side, while the boatman dances his oar against the wooden rod. You have to pay. Venice is sinking, but slowly enough. Gates can be erected to block the hungry tide that surges, furling courtship between water and stone. Sea comes for me tonight. Maybe it carries our breath from the lake near your door. Rain off our shoulders in Fahy's woods at Beltana. Dew from your purple tulips and uncut meadow sweets. Images of you clutter my mind's alleyways. Sit like shadows between corner and canal. They rouse longing in a city of water and glass, liquid cold, fluid hot. Caravaggio dark, skies were sanguineous at sunset. Now mist inside shutters, shrouds the Venetian glitter of light splayed on walls in red and blue buds in the Murano chandelier. Tonight is full moon. A mist of rain rims her wide-eyed light. Loneliness, a single beam down the smudged waterway. If only this small light, or this dark night, or the sea's impatience working at the foundations of this old wall, could prize ajar the future momentarily, and you were there on a shore somewhere, waiting. This is a city of indulgence, and I pay the boatman twice if he brings you. So just to move away from sex for a moment, I'm just going to read you a poem I wrote for my... Oh, I shouldn't tell you that. A man called Norm. Coming of age for Norm. They're not like lovers. After they've gone, we don't breathe in longing, uncovering the pillow, or burrow our faces searching for their scent in the hug of damp sheets. But we do let the strip bed lie, its jumble of discarded bedding still guarding the imprint of their body in sleep. They're not like children. In the dark, we don't sleep close to them to share their dreaming, listening through our own slumber to wake at the instant their breath changes. But we do start when they turn abruptly, bumping the wall. They're not like friends, laughing late by the fire, eating chocolate croissants at 2 a.m, looking over new poems together, cleaver in hand, tipsily falling into the covers, begging for a long lie-in. No, these are the fathers of the middle age. Not the ones we knew when we were young, always turned away, locked in, not understanding, fearful of our tramping march to change the world, our shouting, our disrespect. We told them nothing then. They come now to give their time, listening to our lives, the advice is useless, and they know it. They help get the children to school in families that used to have men. They fix the dripping tap, make tables for their grandchildren out of red cedar, lovingly turning the legs, polishing the tops so they gleam burnished in small bedrooms, covered in Star Wars Lego and 9-year-old's birthday cards. At 82, they go out when they're busy and chop the wood, so our barrows are always full. Then set the fire, peel the vegetables, prepare dinner. They show us how to set drip lines in the garden for drier times, tell us to drive more slowly, stand right in the way when we're cooking dinner, whiskey in hand, joking that we're always telling them what to do. After 5 or 6 days, returning to busy lives rich with friends, they drive away into the long trip home, down that wet road with its slips and slides, its dark, distracting trucks looming through the fog, its startling, high-beam distortion. Flutters of fear for them, trembling in our chests. Beside the sad tug of their leaving, we go back to sit at the desk, beside the fold-down lounge, leaving the stubborn puddle of duvet and sheets, still not pushed aside into laundry, cheeks carrying the soft tears of rain inside. Now I'll just read you some poems from a sequence of poems in this book. Silence in the Tongue is a different kind of book for me. It actually traces the experience of the dark, of depression at some levels. And a lot of my books have this kind of air of the stories of loneliness and being unable to feel completed. And depression, among others, my books are full of a terrible illness. I've had breast cancer, osteosclerosis, you know, and they lost my sight, and now I'm into depression. So depression is a really difficult experience, and those of you who don't know it or come near it will know that. So the book actually tries to track what is the cause of it, you know, loneliness and the dark. And the first section deals with that kind of, you know, love lost sort of poem. And then the middle section of the book is called Dead Mother Poem. And it has two sections. The first half deals with my caring for my mother when she was dying of bowel cancer. And the second section is about my reflection and understanding of the relationship I had with her 15 years later. And during that time I realised that my mother had depression, of course undiagnosed and untreated in those days, and was a very frustrated person. But the problem with a depressed mother is that she can pull the child into depression. So it's a learned experience. And part of her problem was that she was incredibly invasive, and in her desire to not be alone in her depression, you know, wanted to live through my skin. So realising all of that, you know, I had to kind of try and write a poem. The first section of the book moves towards the light. You'll be glad he had a few poems on fishing, you know, that sort of thing. But I'll read a few from the Dead Mother poem. This poem comes after a poem about therapy that's opening up the whole section, and it's called Adhesion, and it is a tough poem, so let's warn you. Adhesion. I had to do this, Mother. It got too dark and lonely here with you living underground. Only the sound of the earth as it rubs against the walls, turning in its sleep. I had to do it. The rush is on me. One red angel stands brushing light from the door, her hollow wings whirring like flight. I have to fix it now or stay lost. I'm so tired. I can't carry you any further. My body frenzied, it fizzes like gunpowder in a Catherine's wheel. This weight makes me weary and the dark so heavy. They don't get that, do they? How exhausted it makes us in this light-locked maze. Is that you or me? If I can just lift this skin, rise out of this flesh, the load will be left behind, won't it? Fall into ashes, feather light, crushed with the bone and the sad, sad heart. There's a stain here. Can you see that? Can you? Can you hear me calling you? Look at this stain. You tell me where it came from. You or I, how can I tell? Who owns this voice? Who speaks? What did you do here to make one mind out of two, then leave me alone? I know how you feel. I am how you feel. You grew into me. I am the mandrake plant. This unearthing my long, screaming, original tar baby. I am stuck to you without feathers to fly, coming cold with your own childhood night. What happened to my skin? You adhered to it. No borders. Nothing contained me. Nothing held. Everything flowed away into you, and your tide rushed back in me. I was born old. I was born responsible, mother forever young. Never grown, how you clung. It must have frightened me. I was a child, my shoulders never strong enough, pallbearer for your dead life. You were my burden, my debtor's note. I've come for the cure. Soon I'll see boundaries, tall gates, and arranged toll. Once words are down here, you'll be on the outside. They do it to conjoined twins. It's bound to hurt. It's sliding along my spine now. The filleting knife. He made grandfather clocks out of red cedar after you left him, and he stood quietly in the long years of rearranging rooms, cleaning cupboards, replacing worn carpets you hated, taking out walls like he was reshaping the home he built for a better fit now, until in my father's house there are many empty drawers. You were always wanting one, but your house echoed silence. One stood in my brother's hallway, and in mine, made with his dusted hands, that cut the wood, bore proof the frame, set the mechanism that needs winding each week reliably. You have to attend to a clock with pendulum, weight in balance with time. Now you are dying 3 years after you left him. I'm here with you making carrot juice, and he's moved in with us. His kindness, the balm we both need, binding the three of us, tending wounds with his humour that once landed a sting, but you both suddenly remember you share. He doesn't say much, never one for words. He brought the clock, set it up outside your bedroom door. Four times a night you wake, cancer alive in your liver, a nocturnal creature. You lie waiting till the hour comes round, to know the time by counting chimes. It drives you mad on the indefinite quarter and half hour. I love that clock. You say I wait, even though it drives me crazy. So, after the dying, which I'm not going to read you, some poems about trying to understand, I call it the dark, the depression. It comes kind of like a land, both a land and a character in the book. And this is a kind of a child poem, really. Still small voice. And the dark came on me, I was going to say. When the dark came and when the dark inside me came on and I was 11, I would walk along the beach alone, thinking the sea looked so deep I could stroke right in. But would it be cold in there, trying to suffocate by immersion? Could I hold myself under, I who swam so well? Close the briny swallow of it, I didn't try though, then or since. No one was listening. Your ear was a shell, its conch boom drowning me out. My voice was so small to you. Maybe it seemed to come from a long distance, and no one had ever heard yours. You were still struggling with expectation. You weren't ready to grow up. Someone had forgotten your childhood, and now you were stuck. They said you were a serious child. You went to see a pantomime, shocked them when you said, the three little bears were lovely. The only time anyone recalled you enjoying yourself. They must have been impressed because my grandmother told my father after you married, and my father told me, and I'm telling you because it must be important if so many people repeat it. They said your childhood was lonely, no brothers or sisters, no friends either, you could remember. At a young age, you had scarlet fever and were locked away at home. You told me about cool iron railings at the fence as you peered through at children going to school, then back to their warm, noisy homes. Like prison bars, they were. Life locked out. All the company, the fun, scrambling together beyond. They were scared you were dying. Grandma nearly died having you. That makes a mother anxious, I know. I nearly died in childbirth too. And your Irish grandfather had buried five of his brothers and sisters, aged 1 to 14, all dead in 4 weeks from scarlatina, August 1880, County Limerick. Do you think your hearing was affected? My voice was so small to you. When I opened my lips, it seemed caught and gusted away, so I couldn't hear it either. You had to leave a nightlight on, balancing on top of my dusty wardrobe, or I might have got lost in the night. I might have disappeared, and no voice to call with. It was a small lamp, only 6 inches high. It had a boiled egg white glow that shone like pearl in hours between dark and light. I loved it. Shadow wolves never came near it. Though sometimes I saw you hovering in the shadows. These are the farewell days now. Leave the light on, please. Leave the light on when you go. Last one I'll read from that sequence and then maybe two more. So, yeah. This is out of the labyrinth. The image of the labyrinth is all through this sequence. And so, you know, these things that hold on to you, and then one day you realise that actually you're the one holding on. So, out of the labyrinth. We're coming to the end now, and I'm holding on. It seems the string is in my hand after all. Life is opening up ahead, round and warm. Here's the last kiss. The band is packing up. Grab balloons for the kids. Carry them along with the laughter, the charge, the blistered gift. I remember your irreverence on holidays, striding in shorts and thongs into fancy hotel dining rooms, dragging out humiliated, immensely satisfied that you'd broken the rules. You elbowed your way to the head of so many queues, saying politely, excuse me, returning with booty through an astonished throng. In Paris, you did this ticket for the Folies Bergère. Explaining Dad was deaf, you got front row seats, though he spoke no French. We had a great view, you said. At Shannon Airport, the sign read, don't park here. And underneath, don't even think of parking here. You said, forget it, they don't mean us. You embarrassed us. Wore hot pink silk pants late in life, did skips at your local gem club dressed in wig and bikini, pear-shaped, bottom bouncing, breast bulging, you loved the stage. You told lies, and the speed you were doing in that old tank of a fair lane actually became 20 kilometres less, even the cops starting to doubt the corner stop signs. You had depression anxiety, collecting hundreds, no, thousands of rubber bands, bits of string, plastic bags, takeaway containers, jelly moulds with holes in them, letters of a lifetime, all those paper stickers. You had guts. You just wouldn't bow down. You taught us, no is only a word, it can't hurt you. But when cancer came, you moved into courage like a skin. That gathering grace in you, that ordinary heroic, left a luminous snail trail for me there in the dark when cancer struck my breast 5 years on. And it drives me, that curiosity you had, kicking in my blood, taking the boys to see some wonders in corners of the world, cathedrals, galleries, ruins, stone fences, a city of canals. You flooded me. But it taught me to feel inside another's skin. Poetry, the only purpose, the one survival. You didn't know, did you? You grew out of the leached soil of your time. If you sat in the scent-loaded garden beneath windows in the house on Princess Street and listened, you wouldn't understand me. You'd still be sad, hurt, and I'd still be sorry. There is a tesoro there, true. Today my garden is wet with rain, so green in every shade it could be Eden, but there would be an apple tree, a snake, a choice. Sun is struggling to light a square of grass outside the open door. Fruit are coming into this new spring that carries the aching deadwood from winter, built into what went before, what comes after. The delicacy of butterflies, short-lived, is playing with light and shadow. Sap-filled trunks yield up breath from the lightness of leaves, shades draining away, rushing trees, rustling their joyful departure from the heaviness of soil. You want to go with them. I know. Finally then, remember, in spite of scars, it never did fail. Love. One?
Okay.
Two? Okay, two. Alright. I'm going to read you two Irish poems. Two Irish poems, what does that mean? I'm going to read you two poems set in Ireland. So, I live on the west coast. In Connemara, and this is for a friend of mine who unfortunately died last year, Susan Gallagher. It was written in 2004, and you know, it tries to capture that the love of the land and well, the clatter really. Things You Gave Me, for Susan, 2004. Ah, actually, here it is. One of the things you gave me.
There you go.
That's it. This is the scarf. It begins russet henna at the centre, moving out through electric orange, flaming moth breccia, or sunset over Connemara shores. It keeps darkening to burgundy heather and the purple brown of bulk hills in winter. Long and wide the chiffon scarf you gave me, though not as long as the distance I travel from you. Strange that the colours are the same as those rugs I brought from Moira Tide, hand woven from earth to flame, warm across my bed, stained with fine threads of sky blue and a slit of green sea that splits the rocks in Mammon Bay. I sleep each night under the crust of that land, under that sun going to its rest, though broad is the ocean between us. Light as a hot day's gingery haze, that scar. You must have been thinking of summer in your whitewashed cottage with its heretical yellow windows, though this year I came out of season, trees chopped and leafless, winter's dark meniscus of burnt almonds, skin tight over land. Too early for golden blooms, green spears of bog iris thrust up through the turf, fields of them gathering to shame the armies outside the walls of Troy. A cherry tree further south were blossom laden, gyrating wildly in the wind to drop their pink pom-poms across pavements, crowded into gutters, catching in our hair and our laughing mouths racing to escape the rain. I spared nothing this time with the peat, banked it up high, fierce lava beds thick in the grate. Finally learning the skill of raking a fire, each day I relit it from coals I'd hidden under ash the night before. I loved this, that phoenix flame. I'd stand in the dark outside just to hear the sea break stones on dramine and taste comfort in the cindery air. I didn't mind the cold. Even sleet couldn't chill the glow of returning. Friends called my borrowed house the Shebeen. Too much wine we had to feed my gluttony for their company, for music, for words, for the stroke of island on my skin, and deeper, a spun thread to carry back in my veins. Leaving, you gave me a clatter ring, fearful that my own small version, not gifted by a friend, is tarnished by that look. You knew then, and you know now. Friendship is threaded in this warp of coming and going, across the web of things, left and taken. Fabric on skin, colour-infused memory, the land, the flame, the dance of the cherry trees, and this ring, my silver currency of remigration, I never take it off. Thank you. And the last poem is The Gift of Leaving, which is written about the place I live in. And please forgive me for my very poor Irish pronunciation. Which, you know, sometimes I've seen people at readings go, ah! Which is really unnerving. So I really appreciate it. You don't go, oh! it's written about the leaving Eriskillen. And the place I live is the rural land called Eriskillen. It's a thing. Finger into the Atlantic below Clifton, and when I'm talking about that other place, I'm talking about Australia. The gift of leaving. Just when I had it by heart, that hip swell of hills curving into Barnacle, top. I'm going to do it every time. I'll lose the rhythm if you do that. Go on then, Jim. Come on,
Jim.
You can.
You want to know
top of the wind. Each roll, smooth, little stone of Boat Harbour and Jermyn Beach, the stormy head of Bay of Kanduelen, its sandy flesh, ripe peach in the warm afternoon light. A peak of forehead at Ardmore, from which at night we watch the double beat of syncopated slime head pulse white among the grass-green northern lights. The spectacle, two locks flooded with sky, holding its moon-blue light long past dusk, darkening the bog hills around, moulded by shadow, and a scatter of rocks frosted with lichen slithering into fences. Just when I'm caught into the web of seasons, strewn sunlight of gorse and smouldering purple haze of heather, faded now under the burnished blaze of bracken as autumn rolls across the bog. The inward turning day. The sea holding its deep breath to bursting, highest tide of the year swelling over roads, leaving its thick clutter of honey-glazed weeds. Just when clean western gale grazed my face, skin singing with salt in the dark star-flecked night, taking the children, sleeping children from car to bed, after a night drenched in music and poems, the ocean whipped to craggy waves, mimicking the jagged rocks, frothing pleuro white at Tarragon Bazan. Just when this thread of land, the Atlantic, is woven into my dreams, this place of soft quiet where the empty hands of the starving built a harbour, eyes wet with tears for those dead, or jammed into boats full of hope, their pearly tears flowing down the years, making rich this place of full hearts and sweet wounds. Just when the filigree of family ties here splays open from my blood, raveling into the mossy veins, ribboning along through the dark peak, shadows in another land take form, tugging on my twine of years, tangled in that other place. The gift of leaving is to remember with you these names of place, rolling them on the tongue of memory, not clipped, not bitten out of language. The gift of leaving is to see this place as if for the last time, wrapped in the mist of longing, a snapshot for the album of dreams. The gift of leaving is to slip somewhere silent or sacred in the repossessed spells of the old ways, the shadow of my voice, fall of my step, so that bound by what is left behind, returning is assured, like all things, unknown. Thank you. Thank you.